This Roto Report is brought to you by Joe Laser with Laser Insurance and Financial Services. Whether you need auto, home, health, life, or commercial insurance, or if you're looking for advice as you plan for your retirement, call Laser Insurance and Financial Services at 330-722-4444. Well, a lot of people right now, I don't know if they're over it or they're trying to get over it, but as they watch the United States play Portugal in the World Cup today, it looked like the United States was going to advance into the knockout round as they led 2-1 late in the match with Portugal, only to give up a goal. Just a gut-wrenching tie is the best way to describe it, a 2-2 tie to Portugal. And joining us to break down the game and what happened on the positive side and the negative side, he's the Columbus Crew play-by-play man and former intern with me where I used to work at WKNR. Neil Sika joins me. Neil, how are you tonight, my friend?
Kenny, great to be with you. Well, at least we can say the fans have it, and that's World Cup fever, because you can have the gut-wrenching highs and the euphoric highs and the gut-wrenching lows, but man, we were 30 seconds away from maybe children being born 9 months from this day.
I agree with you, and I did a podcast before the game saying this was the most important soccer game in U.S. men's history because, A, you're playing Ronaldo and Portugal. You get a chance to knock them out with a win. Also, if you win, you advance to the knockout stage, and it keeps the momentum, Neil, going with the soccer buzz that is being felt around the United States. I think the biggest soccer buzz that I can remember, and I'm one of the neophytes, you know, getting into soccer and everything like that, I just felt it would have a monumental effect if they could have won today and punched their ticket. Now, they can still get there, but beating Portugal and Ronaldo just would have sent a message to all the fans in the U.S. as well as around the world that the United States is a team to be reckoned with. Was I overstating that before the game or no?
No, I don't think so. You know, clearly, you wanted to have it in the United States' own hands to control their destiny, to be in position to clinch the group on Thursday when they play Germany. You know, they're still in pretty good spot. Tie or win, they go through. And even if they lose, you know, you get into a goal differential situation. But to think that, you know, your stomach's swelling because Ghana could play a factor again, like they have in the previous two World Cups. And you were enlightening and talking about the excitement around this World Cup as opposed to, let's not forget the United States had a really great run in 2002 in the quarterfinals, but playing in Japan and Korea with the time difference, getting up early, MLS was struggling at that time, Major League Soccer, to find a foothold. And 12 years later, the big difference is, even through the 2006 and the 2010 World Cups, these players, you were talking about Ronaldo and Messi, they're guys that are known because look at all the games that we can watch on TV at the club level and when other countries play in these biennial tournaments, 70, 80 games per weekend. That includes Major League Soccer, which has got one heck of a lot better. Dempsey and Bradley playing in the league has helped the profile. So it's all just kind of rapidly growing in these last 12 years to where we're seeing it at a fever pitch and the fans are excited. Who doesn't want to root for their country in an environment that we saw in the Ghana game, or we saw at the end of the Algeria game in 2010, and then here today, and the ebbs and the flows, it's fantastic. And this World Cup in general has just been incredible. I mean, goals scored, stars have been there, Messi's goals. You know, Ronaldo hasn't done much, but he had that one moment of brilliant play today with that cross in the end. And that's what people want to see. They want to see goals scored. They want to see action, entertainment. I can maybe think of two or three games that have been dud, but it's been so compelling. And the best thing about it, if you're a United States fan, Kenny, is you're seeing where the U.S., clearly, they have some flaws, okay? But they're not that they can't overcome them to beat a really good team like a Ghana or even a Portugal, and who knows how it plays out against Germany. Brazil's supposed to run away with this World Cup being in their homeland, yet they haven't had a convincing performance through their first two games. Croatia was unlucky to not get something out of that. They've got Cameroon tomorrow. The Americas are doing great. The European clubs are struggling. I mean, there's just so much compelling storyline that I think has helped in terms of the viewing audience. And then the United States play. Winning that first game was key. And today was just really a fantastic soccer game locked into the fact of emotions of high and low.
Neil Sika is our guest, Columbus Crew play-by-play man. Neil, let's break it down right out of the gate. What you don't want to do against Portugal is fall behind, and the U.S. has struggled early with the exception of the last game against Ghana where Dempsey scores early. They've given up early goals, and today no different. And Jeff Cameron, I mean, this is the guy that plays in the Premier League. You count on him back there defensively. Did he just lose his focus on clearing that, or what happened there? Because that was a monumental mistake.
Yeah, it's an individual mistake, and we can, you know, we were doing a viewing party pregame, half, and postgame show down here in Columbus, and you can dissect tactics and how you want to come out and play against the Portuguese team that's really up against it after their terrible performance against Germany and playing with a man down for 55 minutes, but you can't account for an individual error like that with Cameron. The cross into the area was poor, and the way Cameron dealt with it was shockingly bad. But for me, the play goes back even further because the United States had the ball in the attacking half. And Alejandro Bedoya is of Colombian descent, born in New Jersey, played a couple of years at Boston College and has spent time over in Sweden and France. Lost the ball once, had a chance to win it back against Ronaldo at midfield, didn't do that. Had a chance on the tackle before the ball came out. When you give it away that cheap, and I was talking about possession being one of the key factors. You know, the United States midfield was kind of absent in that game against Ghana. Those were the little things. So a lot of people pin that on Cameron, and rightfully so. I mean, that was an error and an easy clearance that he should have gotten rid of. But then you put yourself behind the proverbial eight ball. But I almost like that better than how they scored the first goal against Ghana, where then you're, okay, we're up this early. We're reacting to having the lead and maybe sitting back and absorbing pressure as opposed to, all right, now we're down a goal. Well, we wanted to come out and play. Now we've got to go do that. And it actually ended up benefiting the U.S. in the end because I thought they adjusted really well and were great for the majority of the game.
Yeah, they played well from that point on. I mean, offensively, even in the first half, even though they don't score, they had opportunities. Dempsey had a hell of a game today, had some chances early on. They finally get the equalizer in the second half on just a laser from Jermaine Jones. Again, I'm just starting to follow this team. Saw him play once in person when they came to Cleveland Brown Stadium in a friendly against Belgium and that. So I don't know much about Jermaine Jones. Is that the norm for him? Is this guy a weapon that this team has and we'll see more of this from him?
No, I think that in terms of his goal-scoring ability, you know, when you play at the highest European level, maybe you've got that in you. But Jermaine Jones has been an interesting case for United States fans and for the media alike. He's tough. He's the muscle. You could arguably say his best game was against Ghana and how he kind of bullied around the midfield as they packed it in that diamond shape. But he's always susceptible to that heavy challenge, a yellow card. That being said, he hasn't picked up any red cards in any U.S. games. And he was the first – you got five German-Americans on this Jurgen Klinsmann roster. He was the first that kind of bucked that trend or went to that trend when he came in to take over the job as the head coach. So it's like, all right, well, he played in Germany. He should have some talent. But we quickly found out he's not the most technical guy on the ball. But, man, what a strike. I mean, that was like Messi's game winner against Iran yesterday, just a curler that you couldn't have asked for a better moment. And, of course, coming after that, they had the ball cleared off the line by Costa and the Bradley shot. So you're wondering if they're going to have another chance at all, if it was going to be their day at all. But the game lent itself for the United States to get a goal. They attacked down the left side, Ronaldo's side. You know, his leg's not the best, so it put him higher up in the field and left a lot of space behind. And Almeida, the left back for Portugal, struggled with that. The United States went that way with Fabian Johnson and Graham Zuzi early on. They connected some passes and really kind of fatigued out Portugal. You know, that was the plan with the formation, to overcrowd the midfield, make them work. I mentioned the 55 minutes playing down a man. They were tired, exhausted, and then you're looking at the conditions. You know, 80% humidity, 84 degrees. And for MLS players, they're maybe used to that playing in Dallas or Houston. You get a situation where Portugal's not comfortable temperatures, and you were just alluding to Clint Dempsey. I mean, the guy's the boss. He's got a broken nose. He's breathing through one nostril and to turn in that type of performance, and then he goes on to have what we thought at the time would have been the game winner, but the go-ahead was spectacular. Just a smart player, and that's the reason he's the captain.
Yeah, Dempsey scores, gives them a 2-1 lead. Did a great job of staying on sides on that play and off his belly in the goal. They're up 2-1. At that point, did you feel that the way they played and the substitutions that Jurgen Klinsmann made were the right substitutions, and were they too, to use an old Marty Schottenheimer term, with the Browns, because that's what this felt like, the way they ended up tying this thing at the end, the prevent defense. Was it the right move with the way they ended the game after going up 2-1?
Yeah, this isn't on Jurgen Klinsmann at all. I mean, it's, you know, the personal errors that rear their ugly head in that final sequence. It was like a car wreck on that last counterattack by Portugal to get the equalizer in the fifth minute of stoppage time. Let's first, you know, the Midas touch for Klinsmann. He's gotten a lot of scrutiny on who he's brought on the roster and who he hasn't. And we can get into the Landon Donovan discussion. It's irrelevant at this point anyway, since they're two games in. But the John Anthony Brooks sub coming on, getting the goal against Ghana. All right, now you look at today. They bring on DeAndre Yedlin. He's a right back, and he's very prone to going forward, and Klinsmann puts him at midfield, and people are kind of like, well, all right. You know, another young kid that's getting his first taste of major action, and he's the guy who takes it to the byline and sets up that go-ahead goal. I mean, that's an MLS sequence right there with Yedlin, Bradley, Zuzi, and Dempsey contributing to that goal. So I thought all of his subs were really good. Even Wondolowski came on, works hard, a poacher who plays for the San Jose Earthquakes. But then you bring on Omar Gonzalez, and the one thing that hurt was the slow reaction time. And this has nothing to do with Klinsmann, but Zuzi was walking off, and that was the reason given for the one additional minute of stoppage time. So instead of 4 minutes, you had five. Yeah. We all know what happens in that final minute. You got the ball, Kenny. I was just watching the highlights. You got the ball at their goal line. I mean, you're down at their byline. They've got to go essentially 110 yards the other way, and this is the individual error part. The ball comes back in the midfield. And Michael Bradley, who didn't have his best game against Ghana, you know, he loses that tackle. He loses that challenge to Adair, who for a center forward, and this has been Portugal's biggest problem through the years, they haven't had a guy. You know, Ronaldo's one thing coming off the wing, but they haven't found that typical number nine up top that can really be effective. And Adair, I thought, was missing in action for much of the game. And he comes back. I mean, he had that save by Tim Howard at the end of the first half, but he wins that challenge, starts it the other way. Ronaldo's there, and then the lack of communication again. Cameron, Fabian Johnson, you got an open guy running through the middle. One guy, one Portuguese player in the penalty area on that cross, and it was exquisite from Ronaldo. Fantastic. You knew
how does that happen? These guys have been training for 4 years. Okay, you only get to play in the World Cup once every 4 years, and I was talking with my son about this because, like you, he's a huge soccer fan, and we were like, how does when you go back and you look at that, okay, and you just talked about the giveaway by Bradley, he's supposed to be your best all-around complete player, the guy in the middle that's supposed to control everything. How does he give the ball away there, which starts, the run? And then how does Cameron not beat his man back there? Who was it? Varela that scored the tying goal? How does he get back there and give up that goal? Cameron, when you look back on it, was the reason for the first goal, and you could argue after the giveaway by Bradley, he was the reason for the second goal because this guy beat him down there.
Yeah, I don't necessarily put the bullseye. I mean, he was certainly responsible or in the mix of it, and there needed to be better communication with Fabian Johnson. If you look at the replay, Adair, who wins the challenge from Bradley, essentially is running down the middle of the field, and so Cameron has that responsibility to lock in on him. He stopped his run, so it kind of created Cameron to hesitate. Meanwhile, though, you've got Valera running down off the left, and Fabian Johnson, who was the culprit in the Ghana goal, gets ball watching, and he gets skin coming down that left. He gets behind him. There's no talk or communication. You can see them looking at each other, and then the ball goes out wide. But, you know, if Michael Bradley wins the ball, which he's won the United States fans, Kenny, because of his work ethic, and there was a long talk long time ago about, all right, well, he's playing for his dad, and that's why he's in there. But he's become one hell of a talent and a pretty darn good player. Now, his technical ability at times, you can question that. He's a good passer of the ball, the best distributor that the United States has. And he's had some bumpy roads here through the first two World Cup games. But you look at the bench, and Mix Diskerud is maybe the only other option if you were to think about sitting Michael Bradley, but he doesn't play defense nearly as well as Bradley does. So that's the bigger concern. He got beat on the ball by another guy, plain and simple. And then that starts going out wide. Nani finds Ronaldo, and well, we all know what happened then.
Yeah, 2-2 tie. So not the end of the world, though. Luckily, there's one more game, and we're talking with Neil Sika, Columbus Crew, play-by-play man. We look back at the 2-2 tie with Portugal. They do have a game Thursday, and they control their own destiny. I guess if you would have told me, Neil, before this World Cup started that the United States team would have 4 points going into the Germany game and all they needed was a tie to advance, I probably would have taken it. But that's the way they lost that game, and they could have already punched their ticket. It's gut-wrenching. It feels like a loss. But let's look ahead to Germany. What is Germany's strength? How do we match up with Germany? And I know that's where Jürgen played and he coached, and the coach there now was his assistant, so it's the pupil against the teacher and all that. So give me an idea of what their chances are of at least coming out of there with the tie and advancing.
Well, don't look back to that result that the United States had first and foremost against the Germans in Washington, D.C. A year and a half ago, the summer of 2012. Yeah, you've got seven guys on that German roster that are on this World Cup team, and that was pretty much their B-side, if you will. It was a nice win for the United States. That's Germany's only international loss, I think, in their last 20 matches going back. They cleaned up in qualifying. This Kenny is a world power. Although they haven't really won a major tournament, you got to go back to Euro 1996. But they're always there in contention. They always seem to make deep runs in the World Cup. They're loaded again, despite an injury to Royce, who was going to be the young gun and forward for this German team who got hurt in the games leading up. But they put in Thomas Müller, I mean, and they don't need to actually work with a top-level striker. I mean, they've got Miroslav Klose, who's the all-time leading World Cup goal scorer, or tied for that lead, on the bench at 36, 37 years of age. And Müller comes in and scores the hat trick in the first game against Portugal. What a game it was against Ghana, especially the second half, going back and forth. They're loaded. I mean, they've got Ozil, Götze. The attack speaks for itself. Kadira in the midfield, Boateng. They can be a little susceptible in the back, but Neuer, the goalkeeper, is one of the best in the world. A lot of Bayern Munich players on this team. That Bayern's been a power if you watch the Champions League over the last couple of years. So it's hard to find a weakness, and it's hard to find a better storyline than this last game. We were saying even a couple games ago, you don't really want to leave it to a result to Germany. The good thing is the goal differential and a lot of things have to go in Ghana and Portugal's favor to go against you, even if you were to get the tie and or even if you had the loss. I mean, a narrow-minded loss may not hurt you, but you just you don't want to leave it to that. Yogi Löw, this is his time to maybe want, I don't want to be too hard on Klinsmann and say that he wants to crush him, but you know, for the longest time, basking in the shadows, they made that run to the semifinals in 2006 in their nation. And Klinsmann was known as the master motivator, and Löw was the tactician. And now people are going to start their little diatribes and controversies on, hey, let's play for a draw and we'll both go through. And you know, maybe at the end of the day, that's true. That might be the result. But in the fierce spirit of competition, don't think that Löw doesn't want to take Klinsmann down and show that, you know, this can be his team. This is their time to shine.
Right.
There's some Bayern players that, you know, when Klinsmann was managing Bayern Munich in 2008, 2009, it didn't go so well. So there's a lot at stake there. But beyond that, it's really just kind of fluff. I think the United States, they had a good performance today with the group out there. But let's not discount. They're playing on 3 days rest coming out of this climate. That one day for Germany and not having to play in the Amazon, I think is huge. And if Matt Beisler, who's arguably been your best defender out there, can't go because of that hamstring, then you got some really big questions to answer with that back line, which has been, and what we thought it might be, or at least if you talk to the media, that could have been the biggest area of the field for susceptibility for the United States. And that's leaked a couple of times here. And if you've got to bring in John Brooks, a kid who's got really one competitive game, even though he was the hero of the first game to play, Omar Gonzalez, I mean, you could go with him. Cameron, crisis of confidence. Same thing with Gonzalez. So going against that German trio or even attacking four, look out.
Is there an edge at any position on the field or in any way, shape, or form for the U.S. against Germany, or is it going to just take their greatest game ever just to get a draw out of this in advance?
I would say if you watched the Ghana game yesterday, they were able to turn Germany over a couple of times out of the defense in the mid third and turn those into quick counterattacks, and that led to the
Okay.
go-ahead goal by Jean. But also set pieces, good old-fashioned American set pieces, which is one of the strengths of the United States. The key is, can they hold the ball long enough and get into positions where they get fouled and set up? Because that defense, it's not getting any younger for the Germans.
Right.
And they've been playing Philipp Lahm, who's traditionally a left back. They've had him in front of the central defense because they've been concerned about those attacking areas. So there are some possibilities there, but I don't know, will they have the ball enough to control
Is
that if
48%
that's the
of the
case.
time enough, Neil? That's what they had it today. They had the ball 48% of the time against Portugal. Is that enough against Germany?
Yeah, I think you'd be ecstatic if you had it almost half the time, but 60% starts to become really good if it's a lopsided 70-30, which I don't see, but 60-40 could be more comparable. But if they're anywhere near equal at 50%, I think that'd be great. I mean, yeah, then I'd say they would have a shot, and who knows? Like I was saying in the first segment, talking about the unpredictability of this World Cup, there are teams that you would say, all right, who's looking like the favorite to win this World Cup right now? Germany, you could put up there. France has looked pretty good. People will stick with Brazil. The Colombians have looked excellent. Chile, possibly. The Netherlands, after what they did to Spain, you keep an eye on. But they're not without their flaws. And I
Right.
think the beauty of it for soccer fans watching for the first time for the United States, thinking, well, how much of a shot do they really have? Well, who knows? And that's the greatness about it. That's why we're addicted to the NFL, right? I mean, the parity of being on par, and we're seeing that more in college football and some of the other sports. So it's come back to earth. I mean, the United States, I'm not saying they've caught up to the rest of the world, but it's not that disparity that maybe it was even 20 years ago. So that's the great thing about what Thursday will bring. But the scary part is they could have wrapped it up today, and we were discussing this. It could have been done. It could have been sold, signed, sealed, delivered on to the next round. And with the way Group H has been, you could have had the inferior opponent after Belgium, who looks sluggish to start and then has finished off the last two games. But the thing is, go back to 2002 when they made that quarterfinal run. They almost didn't get out of the group after having that great win against Portugal in the first game. They tie South Korea, and then that third game. So you're going in, you're feeling pretty good. You got 4 points, just like you have now. And they lost 3-1 to Poland. And they needed a South Korea goal against Portugal to advance out of that group. So basically, you don't want to leave it into other people's hands. And that's why you get scared thinking about what Ghana can do and how good they looked. And they looked pretty good both games. They just, they didn't break through the United States until late and then gave up the set piece. But the Germany game, they looked like they may have had them on the ropes for a little while with the way they were playing. You never know. In Portugal, with all their injuries and how tired they are, who knows what team will show up on Thursday? And you're playing simultaneous. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, it would really suck if Ghana knocked the United States out of another
Yeah,
World Cup
wouldn't it really?
on Thursday because of goal differential or something like that. We'll have to wait and see. It's going to be a busy day on Thursday. You've got the World Cup game between the United States and Germany at 12 o'clock, and then the NBA draft with the Cavaliers later on that night. So it's going to be a great sports day, and hopefully it will end with the United States getting out of the group of death and on to the knockout round. Either as the number one or the number two team coming out of the group. Let's just hope that tonight's tie in the last 30 seconds of stoppage time doesn't cost the United States a chance to move on in what has been just an exciting 2014 World Cup.
No doubt about that. And then we can let all the Cleveland fans worry about David Blatt's blue jeans and whether they'll be for sale in the team shop a little bit later on.
Neil, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Hopefully with a U.S. win, maybe we'll do something next week and preview who they match up with in the knockout stage. All right?
You got it, my friend. Always great talking to you.
Neil Sika, Columbus Crew play-by-play man, joining us today here on the Rotor Report. It was brought to you by Laser Insurance and Financial Services. Call Joe Laser for all your insurance and financial needs at 330-722-4444, or you can check them out online at laserinsurance.com. And as always, C-Town, keep it real.